Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh oui, Partey.
Oh oui. Oh oui. Oh oui, ce qu'a fait Thomas Partey pour Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang lancé. Oh, et de deux. Et de deux pour Arsenal. Et le sourire de Bukayo Saka. Oh, et de deux. Oh, et de deux. Bukayo Saka. Oh, et de deux. Saka. Oh, et de deux. Saka. Bukayo. Bukayo. Saka.
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, good morning to you.
Good morning to you too, Andrew. How you doing today?
I'm all right. This is a bit of a landmark episode. This is number 400. Arsecast Extra 400.
Wow. And coincidentally, that's the amount of times Arsenal were offside against Benfica.
Do you know what, though? You know what I've realised in the span of these 400 episodes?
Yeah.
Is that there is no secret. I thought there was a secret, but there isn't a secret. And I saw people getting free Kit Kats, and I thought, what do they know? What do they know that I don't know?
Yeah.
And I can tell everyone right now, just believe in yourself, set up a website, spend the best part of 20 years running that website, then set up a podcast nearly 15 years later, down the line, with thousands of episodes, thousands of hours of audio in the can, so to speak. And you too can get free Kit Kats.
I know.
It's amazing.
I can't believe the life we're leading, Andrew. And all we needed to do was to take those simple steps. Have you eaten any of your free Kit Kats?
I have, yeah. I've eaten quite a lot of the orange Kit Kats because I am dangerously addicted. I'm sort of almost as addicted to orange Kit Kats as I am to yellow M&Ms.
Okay. Are you now hoping that someone from M&Ms is listening?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yellow M&Ms are the best thing ever, et cetera, et cetera. There we go.
Sure. But yeah, and our address is...
Yeah.
I had a Kit Kat. I had a Kit Kat after the game. It's there, an orange Kit Kat, to kind of, you know... I felt I needed some sort of closure on the evening, and the Kit Kat provided it, so thank you.
That's good. Who knew that it had the properties to heal whatever was going on in your brain with regards football and Arsenal, which, of course, can do many things to all of our brains and hearts and other bits, I guess. So what was your state of mind at the end of that game that required you... To partake in the sustenance of the orange Kit Kat. What was it? What was your gut feeling that you said, I have to have orange Kit Kat to help me cope with this?
I think I was a bit confused, to be honest with you, Andrew, because, well, I thought there was quite a lot that was positive about the performance, but I don't know if that's an opinion that's widely shared. Certainly from the replies I got on my social media, a lot of people were really frustrated by Arsenal's performance in this game. I was frustrated much more by the opportunities they missed, but I was encouraged by the fact they created them, if you see what I mean. So I came away from it feeling like... That is a sort of disappointing result given the opportunities we created, but I don't think, based on it, the second leg shouldn't hold a huge amount of fear for us. I think we were the better team.
Okay. I mean, has somebody broken into my house and given you my hymn sheet? Because I think we're singing from the same one right here.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no,
how,
no.
Shall I take an alternative position just to make it a more interesting
no,
podcast?
No, I don't think so. I think there's plenty to discuss anyway, because similar to you, I obviously am frustrated by the opportunities that we missed, but I'm a lot more encouraged by the fact that we created them, that we are a team that now fashions, you know, good opportunities to score goals. And, you know, maybe my mind is still in that dark period where we didn't do that in any significant way back earlier in the season. I much prefer, I'm not saying it's something to celebrate necessarily when you don't score the goals that you should score in a goal or in a game, but I am more encouraged by the fact that in the last two games, for example, we've played with this team, we've played in this system, we've played Aubameyang up front. He got a hat-trick against Leeds. He missed a hat-trick basically last night. Mm-hmm. But if you were looking for the positives, it's that we are, with him up front and with the players that we've got around him, making very good chances for him. I think, you know, it's easy to say on another day he scores two or three goals, but I do think there's something to that. I mean, I do recognize that there are elements of the way that we played which would have been frustrating to people, particularly maybe in the last part of the game, but I think we'll come to that, that there might be some reasons for that. But yeah, I feel like, I also feel like there is perhaps an element of, we've seen this scenario before from an Arsenal mm-hmm. perspective, where we haven't made the most of our first leg or whatever it might be, or even in a second leg when we haven't scored the goals that we need to score. And in a European tie, we have been absolutely sucker punched and paid the price for that. So I understand if there's an element of people looking at that and feeling a bit traumatized by what might happen in the second leg.
Especially given what happened last season,
yeah.
right? You know, and we'll be going to Olympiacos' stadium of all places. But yeah, and there was a degree to which I think I recall in the first leg, we could have had a better lead than we did. And we missed some opportunities late on there, and ultimately we paid the price. Look, I can't lie. There is that nagging part of my brain thinking, I really hope we don't pay for this.
Mm.
But I suppose kind of everything up to the finishing, I thought, was a continuation of the improvement we've seen recently. And I think, you know, it's, like you say, on another day, sure. But, I mean, Arsenal very easily could have won this game by a couple of goals. And that would have been a really excellent result. So, yeah, I'm not too
disheartened. It's the, you know, where do you stand on the, what's the bigger problem? Is, you know, not scoring enough goals because you're not creating chances a bigger problem than not scoring goals while you're creating chances? You know what I mean? I think there's you know, one is significantly worse than the other for me. If you're not seeing any way for the team to create opportunities, and I don't think that's the case. So,
no, I think a lot of it is about Aubameyang, and it was interesting sort of seeing this kind of fallout of the different ways people assessed his performance. You know, there was kind of one camp that was like, well, this is what Aubameyang's all about. You know, you just got to get him loads. He gets loads of chances for himself with his movement and his pace and his instincts, and he will miss some. And that's kind of, you know, the, how can I say, that's the sort of the equation you accept when you have a striker like Aubameyang. And certainly it was true in the first few years of his Arsenal career. He scored a lot of goals, but he missed some really presentable opportunities as well. And I think he was like that at Dortmund too. Then you've got other people on the other side saying, well, you know, his finishing's way off what it was last season, and this is more evidence of that. I guess that, you know, the truth, somewhat boringly, is somewhere in the middle. I mean, it is true that you can say, well, look, he's getting chances. That's great. That's a positive. It's only a positive up to a point. You know, he does have to start making them eventually. If he missed a couple more like that, I would have been worried. But I think I generally side on, sort of with you on the side of, well, you know, we are fashioning these chances and kind of law of averages. Some are going to go in.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think he should have scored last night. I think he had a bad night in front of goal. It really depends on your glass. Is it half full that he's in those positions, his movement and the way the team are able to find him in those positions? For me, that's a positive. But obviously the negative is when he doesn't put the ball in the back of the net, particularly that first one from early on when Ceballos sent Hector Bellerin down the right-hand side. And that is pretty much as gilt-edged a chance as you can give somebody like Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, I'm not interested in what the XG was. I'm not interested in any of that. I know the quality of this guy and his finishing and the way that he can score goals and the goals we've seen him score in the past. You know, by any standards, let alone his, that was a really bad miss. You know,
the XG of that chance was four, actually. It was
four goals.
Four goals, yeah. and yeah, he somehow conspired to get none from it. Yeah. No, that was a big miss. I mean, you know, and maybe something that he's very good at is kind of putting those things out of his mind. Mm. But maybe it did weigh on him a little bit in some of those later opportunities. You never know with a player how that might affect
them. I mean, the one that he put wide, it's a matter of inches, isn't it? One way or the other, from a decent position in the box, Odegaard set him up. And then the late one where he kind of cut back inside and got tackled, and you're looking for him maybe to use his left foot. I'm not sure it was quite as clear cut on his left foot as it first appeared. When you look at the replays, I think there's little room. It would have to be the ultimate precision finish for it to go in with his left foot there. But, you know, it doesn't look great when you come back and you get tackled.
No, and the one on the sort of right channel, that's not really his side. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily a chance you've seen him take loads of times before. But they were decent opportunities. And Arsenal, particularly in that first half, you know, Benfica were playing this very, very high line. I thought we penetrated that quite effectively, even if, as I alluded to earlier, you know, our runs could have been timed slightly better. I think we would have had even more
opportunities. Okay, let me ask you about the starting lineup then. Were you surprised that there were no changes from the team that played Leeds? Because I was. I really felt like with the schedule that we've got, there was going to be an element of rotation, whether we liked it or not, that in order to keep players fresh and you know, not overburden some players and give some players a chance, et cetera, et cetera, I thought there would be a bit more rotation than we saw. I certainly thought there would be more than none. Now, everyone who says we have to prioritize the Europa League, it is the most important game. It's a more winnable game than Man City, which, of course, it is. You know, there's no question about that when you look at how good City are at the moment and our record against them in recent years. Anyway, I completely understand that. But I do think you could have put out a strong team last night while also making a couple of changes along the way. So were you surprised, A, that he didn't, and B, did you feel like that had an impact, not necessarily at first, but as the game went on?
I think it did as the game wore on, and I think it might go some way towards explaining, you know, the slightly frustrating last 20 minutes or so of the match. I was a little bit surprised, I have to say. I thought that, you know, Lacazette and Pepe hadn't played a minute against Leeds, and I thought one or both of them might well come in. Kieran Tierney, of course, was back in training. I wondered if he might get a start. He came off the bench in the second half, of course. But it's not the first time Arteta's done this recently. I remember after the Wolves game, we went to Aston Villa, and he picked the same starting 11, I think, and said, you know, these guys, the guys who played so well in the first half, deserve another opportunity. And I wondered if this was just sort of the same thing, that he felt he'd found something against Leeds and decided to stick with it. I probably would have mixed it up a bit more than that. But I suppose, I mean, we may come on to this later. I think it means that it will enforce a certain degree of rotation against Manchester City. I mean, if you win this game comfortably and you're looking at it thinking, well, maybe we can even rotate more than we expected in the second leg, it probably feels like a really smart move. But now it just feels like it's sort of slightly put us in a corner where come Sunday, we're going to need to make changes.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, it's a different game plan, isn't it, to Leeds and Benfica than it is for Man City. Man City's about containment as much as anything. It's not about going and attacking the bollocks off them, because that's just how you get picked off by a team like Man City. So, it is or was always going to be a slightly different team slash setup for the City game. So maybe that was what informed this. And I think, you know, you can see how it's fair enough. They played really well against Leeds. I know he conceded those couple of goals, but everything that we liked about the Leeds performance, you know, you can understand why that was in his thinking going into a game where we wanted to win and should have won. Really, this is a game we should have won by a couple of goals. So, you know, if Aubameyang's finishing is a little better, then, you know, he's completely justified in terms of the team he picked.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those, isn't it? But I was a little bit surprised, particularly in the case of Pepe, who has been very good recently. I thought he would get a start. And I wasn't convinced that both Odegaard and Smith-Rowe would start again, just because, you know, we've had previous concerns about Smith-Rowe, even though he's on a very good run of games recently. And Odegaard isn't necessarily the most up to speed, having not played an enormous amount in La Liga.
Okay. So if he's not the most up to speed, where do you categorise or where do you classify his performance last night? Because I really liked Martin Odegaard last night. I thought he was superb in terms of his work rate. I thought we're beginning to now see, now beginning, of course, he's only just played a couple of games for us and this was only his second start, but you can see the vision that he has in some of his passing. And I saw people comparing him to Ozil last night, you know, obviously left foot, came from Real Madrid, playmaker, etc., etc. But to me, the way he passes the ball is much more Fabregas than Ozil. The creativity that he has, or the execution of the passes that he makes, to me remind me much more of Cesc Fabregas, and that's obviously very high praise. And I'm not saying Odegaard is going to be the next Cesc Fabregas or anything like that, but, you know, I wonder if the fact that he has played so little in the first half of this season, he only played 8 times or something for Real Madrid, you know, is that a real bonus for us now? You know, there's an element, of course, you've got to get him match fit, you've got to get him sharp, you've got to get him aware of who he's playing with. And I think to an extent, I think some of our players need to be aware of who they're playing with. You know, there are a couple of moments in the game where if they just looked inside and played a pass, Odegaard had the ball in acres of space in the center of the pitch, driving towards their D, and with his quality on the ball, he can definitely create stuff from there. But I thought it was a really encouraging performance from him, and I liked what I saw a great deal. For me, I know Dani Ceballos was very good as well, and he played some excellent passes too. I mean, he played a really good pass for the goal. We'll come to that in a moment. But I thought Odegaard was the real bright spot for me when you consider what he might bring to this team between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I thought he was good against Leeds, and I thought he was better against Benfica. And actually, funnily enough, I do see the Ozil thing. I think it's partly in the spaces he picks up. You know, he drops out to the right-hand side quite a lot, and he has quite a kind of upright style in the way he runs. But I thought he was very good, and I think he does bring something that we have missed in our team. I mean, obviously, you know, Ozil's not been involved in it, but I think generally that ability to pick a pass in the final third, to make, you know, really brave decisions and have the technical quality to actually carry them through. I think he was really good. And I suppose what was really encouraging is actually that, you know, it looked like he had a bit of a developing understanding with Aubameyang. And I'm not sure, you know, on the subject of Ozil, that's something that they ever really had. You know, Ozil had one assist for Aubameyang, I think, in his time, in their time together. But Odegaard had almost played him in a few times last night. And I think he just brings another dimension to the way we play. And I do like, you know, the setup that we had against Benfica in Leeds with kind of Saka on the right, Smith Rowe on the left, Odegaard centrally. I think it gives you a lot of different options. And Saka and Smith Rowe were both picking up central spaces too. You know, at times they were kind of making those diagonal runs into the box. There is something about that setup that I think works really well. But yeah, he was really good. And his mate, Ceballos, was good too, I thought, you know. It's sort of really easy to say, oh, well, you know, they know each other from Madrid, but they do seem to have a kind of, what's the word, simpatico on the pitch, to borrow a Spanish term. They do seem to kind of find each other and sort of understand where they're going to pick up space. So I think that's encouraging.
Yeah, okay, well, let's talk about their goal, and it came not long after we had a really good chance to go ahead. Some really nice football. You know, I know that there were frustrations about the way we ended up playing, but I thought there were some nice passages of play, and certainly the build-up towards that Saka chance that he dragged wide with his left foot really good. Like, there was just this immediate injection of pace. I think it was Odegaard, Bellerin and Ceballos involved in the build-up, some slick interplay. It just injected a bit of pace into how we got forward. And I think maybe it stood out because we didn't do that enough in the game, but it was a really good chance. And then they go up the other end and get a corner, I think. And from the corner, then they get the penalty. Any issue with the award of the penalty?
I mean, I think by the letter of the law, it's a penalty. His hands are outside of his body, or you're supposed to keep your hands inside your body. You should stuff them in any orifice you can. Yeah, exactly. It's not, you know, it feels very harsh, doesn't it? Because I don't think he's thinking, I'll block the ball here with my hands.
Yeah.
It's just, you know.
I think it is a little bit harsh because it hits his chest first, I think, and then bounces up onto his arm. But given the position of his arms, I can see why it was given. And if it were at the other end, I wouldn't be particularly magnanimous if it wasn't given to us. So there's my little rule.
No,
of penalty,
I think it probably, in the hashtag current climate, I think that is a penalty.
VAR had a look at it. I tell you what was a little bit frustrating for me. Two things, actually. I don't know if you experienced this, but obviously when we scored, there was a VAR check, and there was a VAR check for the for the penalty itself, but they don't show you any replays. They're not showing you what they're looking at. I don't know what they were looking at for our goal. I think it might have been checking if Aubameyang was offside in the build-up. I think that's potentially what it was. It couldn't have been for the pass from Cedric to Saka. So that was a little bit irritating. The other really irritating thing was on the TV coverage, on the fake crowd noise, they'd obviously recorded crowd noise, which every three and a half minutes or so also recorded a referee's whistle in the background.
Yeah.
And that, like, okay, I want to believe that's an accident, but as somebody who works in sound and takes a little bit of pride in the work that I do, if that were me, that would be absolutely deliberate just to annoy people. So whichever sound engineer put that together, fuck you.
I thought you were going to say hats off. You really
succeeded in annoying millions
of people.
I was like, what's the ref blowing for now? And then play is going on. I'm going, they mustn't have heard him. And then after a while, you just kind of get used to it. But it was really irritating.
Yes, it was extremely irritating. And I found the replay thing really frustrating too. I was less convinced than you that Cedric, who was it? That Saka wasn't offside. At the first glance, I was like, oh, maybe that is. So when they wouldn't even show us a replay, I had a horrible feeling that goal would be crossed off. Yeah. And in fairness to Arsenal, you know, they did get back into it pretty quickly. It was a good response, wasn't it, to going behind?
It was, yeah. I mean, could have let heads go down. And, you know, one of those situations where a game you should definitely be ahead in, you're all of a sudden behind in, against the run of play, whatever way you want to call it. I don't think Leno had been tested at all before the penalty. So it kind of was against the run of play. So you could, in some ways, feel a little bit sorry for yourself. But it was a great response. And I think the goal was, it's kind of underrated. I know there was a little bit of good fortune in one way towards the end of the move, but it began with a Granit Xhaka sliding tackle in our box, and I was watching that going, oh no, we've just given away one penalty. Oh no. Oh look, he's got the ball. That's good. My heart can
go. It was kind of surprising, wasn't it, when he came away with the ball.
It was so perfectly timed. I mean, we have to give him credit for that. It was perfectly timed to slide in, take the ball, and begin the move. And when you look at the move, you know, we get it forward pretty quickly. There are few touches. I think I looked at this earlier on, and Emile Smith Rowe takes the most touches on the ball, takes three really quick touches. But Xhaka, it's one touch pass. You know, Ceballos, one touch, you know, and a ball over the top. And we move it and get it forward quickly. And the run of Xhaka is excellent. There's a bit of good fortune where the ball comes back off the face of a defender, but Aubameyang reacts. attacks, keeps it alive, plays it to Odegaard. Odegaard's ball to Cedric is excellent, and it's a good cross, and Saka finishes. So I think it's an underrated goal, and I think given the fact that we had gone behind, to get it back so quickly was really pleasing.
Yeah, and I think you're right to pick out the one-touch thing. I mean, that Odegaard pass is a one-touch pass as well. Mm. And, obviously it accelerates the play. Obviously it makes us more dangerous. And Bukayo Saka, continues to produce end product. I mean, he really is in a rich vein of form at the moment. And it does feel like something's just clicking for him, doesn't it, in the final third?
It does, rather. It does. And long may it last. And we're probably going to have a question in the second half about how long it can last without it, without managing it in one way or the other. So, look, 1-1. And, look, we had that Aubameyang chance not long afterwards. We made our first change not long afterwards. Cedric came off and Kieran Tierney came on. I think that was probably pre-planned to get some minutes into his legs, having been out for so long. And I was looking at a slow pitch. It looked very slow to me anyway, I thought. I could be wrong, but I thought it was a fairly slow pitch. And I thought, how do we get more out of this game? How do we get more against a team who, I think we, in some ways, had worked them out pretty quickly, hadn't we? Because we kept trying to get the ball in behind. And as you said, there were a lot of offsides. But we understood what it was we needed to do. And then I was thinking, well, how do we deal with it in, the second half of the second half, if you like? And I was thinking about, well, who do I want to come on? And I thought Tierney, and I thought Martinelli, and I thought Pepe. Those were the players that I wanted to see. There's an argument, I suppose, that once we took Aubameyang off, the goal threat disappeared, that we didn't have another really good chance on goal, did we, after he went off. So I'm curious as to your thoughts on the substitutions. For me, it's not necessarily those changes in and of themselves. It was kind of how late they were. It was 77 minutes in, so you're only giving these guys 13 minutes. And by that time, Benfica are looking at it going, right, we do not want to concede another away goal. Our substitutions were proactive, I guess you would say. We put on two attackers. At the same time, though, there has to have been some measure of consideration to the game state that, we can't push forward relentlessly and leave ourselves exposed and concede a goal on the break, as we have so many times in the past in situations like this, where for the want of trying to win it, we have given ourselves a bigger task to complete in the second leg. So I think there was an element of that to the final stages of this game.
I think so. And I think the game state and the fact that it's a two-legged tie, for me, influenced the way the match dynamics changed in that last 20 minutes, more so than the individual substitutions. I mean, ultimately, yes, Arsenal brought on attacking players in Pepe and Martinelli, but they brought them on in a fashion that was kind of like for like. And I don't think, it's not as if Martinelli's not a guy who's willing to run in behind or who doesn't have speed. He does offer goal threat ordinarily, but I think Benfica were very wary of conceding a second goal. They dropped substantially deeper. And I think you're sort of right to suggest that Arsenal maybe were a little bit cautious too. Maybe they felt that there was a sting in the tail here for them if they were not careful, and with another 90 minutes to come, they didn't want to risk that. Now, I think you can debate whether that's the right decision or not, because I think the value of an away goal, rightly or wrongly, is so great that maybe you're better off chasing it. But the fact that Arteta in the last 5 minutes or so brought on Mohamed Elneny and brought on, I thought at that point we understood that he was kind of saying, well, this is the result for tonight. It maybe should have been better, but sure, we didn't get there.
I mean, I get it. I mean, I get the value of an extra away goal, but I think our opportunity to score that goal or those goals came earlier in the match.
Certainly.
The reality is that if you concede another goal to Benfica and they score again in the away leg or their away leg, it becomes, even more difficult. So I kind of get why there was a caution, frustrating as it was in that final part of the game.
I'm with you. My frustrations are much more with the opportunities we missed in the earlier period of the game.
Yeah, for sure. Because we'd all be sitting here this morning if we'd gone gung-ho and tried to score a goal and then got picked off on the break. I mean, there would be zero understanding of that scenario. And people would say, when are Arsenal ever going to learn, you know, how to manage and how to control European ties? And I think, you know, there was a lot of people last night, I could see it on my social media, really, who thought this was a terrible game and it was a really frustrating game. And it was a frustrating game because we did spurn those chances to score more goals. But it felt to me very familiar, very much like a first leg European knockout tie that we play and Benfica play and many teams play. You know, they often turn out like this, cagey affairs, because, you know, there's so much at stake. My overriding feeling is, and people might think this is, you know, hugely optimistic based on what we've seen from Arsenal this season, but, you know, I didn't come away from this game thinking, that was our one chance of beating Benfica. We should have done it on the night. I thought they were poor and they were there for the taking, of course. But I'm not going into this second leg hugely worried that we're facing a team who are much better than us and this was our one opportunity to win the game. Look, it's Arsenal. There's every possibility we can contrive to make an absolute balls of the second leg. I'm aware of that. That's a bridge I'm prepared to cross when we come to it. But based on what we did, the chances we created, what Benfica did, you know, as frustrating as it was to not win the game, I'm not massively scared by them for the second leg.
No, and, you know, maybe this was them on a very bad night, but they are the fourth best team in Portugal. You know, they're a long way off the league leaders in Sporting. And I thought they looked vulnerable defensively. They've got some old players at the back there, you know. Who's in there from Spurs? Is it...
Vertonghen. And they have Otamendi. I mean, look...
And Otamendi, yeah.
You know, they had a new guy in there. And I think as well, you know, the what they lack in pace, they certainly make up for in terms of experience, you know, and they sort of dealt with the offside line pretty well. So, you know, there is experience there. But you can see how you can hurt them. You know, we had that twigged. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily say that we are the most intelligent team in the world based on what we've done in recent times. It's not been one of our defining features anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even we had that worked out pretty early on.
No, I mean, I think one of the frustrations people had was that they felt Arsenal were kind of slow moving the ball in the final stages of the game. You know, were they progressing it quickly enough?
Sure.
Do you think tired legs played a part in that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Luiz and Gabriel played against Leeds and played the full 90. Granit Xhaka did too. I mean, Ceballos, again, you know, when he runs out of steam, it's like when you used to have a Walkman and the batteries would go in your Walkman and the music would start. That's Xhaka or Ceballos towards the end of games. Xhaka, you know, has played basically more minutes than any other midfielder. He has played every game, I think, since he came back from suspension that time. So, yeah, and look, when you have players like Luiz and like Xhaka who do have a bit of form for being slow at times, I think, you know, that's certainly true of Luiz. You know, he sometimes, it feels to me like he takes his breather on the ball, if you like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's like, okay, I've got the ball now. I'll just do my thing and no one's going to come near me because I'll just pop it off if someone does. But I'll hold on to it for a bit and just sort of get my breath here, you know. So I think there was an element of that as well, some fatigue. And when it's coupled with players who are guilty of that from time to time, yeah, I understand why it was infuriating, but...
I think it's interesting in Xhaka's case. I think he doesn't actually take as many touches as you might assume. I think it's more his one-footedness that kind of limits him. It means that he has to go backwards at times when you'd like him to go forwards.
Mm.
But in terms of sort of getting it and giving it, he's certainly quicker at doing that than Luiz and I think Ceballos. Even though I thought Ceballos had a pretty good night last night. I mean, there were some really good passes coupled with some of the delaying that we're accustomed to with him. But I think fatigue probably was a factor. And like I say, just that general caginess that kind of crept into the tie.
Yeah.
It was open We had the opportunity to kill it. Unfortunately, we didn't take it.
Okay, well, look, fingers crossed for the second leg at home next week in Greece.
At home.
At home in Greece. Yeah, and look, we obviously have a big game on Sunday. We're not going to discuss that too much here because we'll be doing a preview podcast for Patreon members. That will be out later on this afternoon. So a full Man City preview looking at that game and what we might do can be found at patreon.com/arseblog a little bit later on this afternoon. Right, we'll leave it there for part one. We're going to come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arseblog. Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you sent to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog, and also on the ArsBlog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an ArsBlog member on Patreon. Before we get into the questions, James, a couple of things. One, we have been nominated in the Football Supporters Association Awards for Best Fan Media. We're up against some pretty stiff competition there. So some really good websites belonging to other clubs, but then there are other clubs, so we don't want them to win. So if you could vote for ArsBlog, we'd be very appreciative of that. You'll find a link either on the site for this post, for this podcast, or in the show notes. So have a look at the show notes on your podcast app right now as you're listening on your phone. Click the thing and it will take you to the voting form. There's also some other Arsenal people you can vote for as well. I think it's Alex Scott and Ian Wright are up for Best Pundit, and Vivian Miedema, who is up for Women's Player of the Year. So if you could take the time to vote for ArsBlog, we'd appreciate that. That'd be great.
That'd be lovely.
And I know times are a little bit tough and everyone's having a weird, difficult time, but a couple of things I just want to recommend. One is just a podcast. I know many of you listen to WTF with Mark Maron. I thought the episode with Sam Neill this week was really great, just as an absolute kind of palate cleanser for everything that's going on at this moment in time when he's talking about you know, his vineyards and his animals. I don't know if you follow him on Twitter or Instagram.
I don't.
He's great. He's really great. Does a lot of kind of funny videos, and he's got a vineyard and farm animals. He's got a, I think it's a goat or a sheep or a cow called Jeff Goldblum. So it's good. And he's talking about goat testicles and things like that, which is, you know, fascinating stuff to get your head out of the mire that we're all in at this moment in time. And also just to mention an episode, which I haven't listened to yet, but I'm sure this is going to be good, from our friend, Tayo Papua. Ola, DJ Tayo, a love letter to Ian Wright, which is available now via Giant on Spotify. It's a 25-minute episode all about Ian Wright with Tayo, Amy Lawrence, I think Tim Stillman, Alan Davies involved in that. So that's going to be my afternoon listening. So just to get some goodness out there in the world, have a listen to those things. I think you'll enjoy them.
Yes, I can't wait to listen to that Ian Wright one. Mm. Sounds brilliant.
Does all right. I am going to go first with the questions because I let you go first the last time, and this is episode 400. Ghetto Kaiba, who's at Kaiba Ghetto on Twitter, says, am I the only one who thought this game suited Lacazette up top? Even at halftime when we knew they were sitting back, he could put a shift in front holding the ball up. What do you guys think?
Hmm. I think he might be the only one. personally, I thought that playing Aubameyang against that really high line was pretty effective. And sorry, I got a bit of a cough there. I didn't feel the need to change that. And I thought it was the right thing to bring Martinelli on for Aubameyang because, you know, that was where the space had been. Maybe as the game developed in that final 15 minutes or so, as Benfica began to sit a bit deeper, we might have thought, we could actually use Lacazette maybe slightly more than Martinelli. But I understood why the changes were made. Mm. And I'm someone who likes Lacazette in that role, I think, you know, more than a lot of other people, but this wasn't a fixture where I felt his absence particularly. What about you?
Yeah, I just don't think Lacazette is in those positions. You know what I mean? I don't think Lacazette gets into those positions that Aubameyang got into last night. Now, if you put Lacazette in those positions, would he maybe have taken one of those goals? You'd be confident, wouldn't you, that he could finish the one that Aubameyang missed. And I think Aubameyang himself would feel confident that he could finish that 99 times out of 100 with his eyes closed, blindfolded, and having been spun around 50 times, like at a child's birthday party game, that kind of thing. So, you know, yeah, I just think there's a difference in where those strikers would be when those moves developed the way that they did.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there will be days for Lacazette, and I think Lacazette will play games between now and the end of the season, but maybe even starting this weekend. But last night wasn't one where I felt we missed him. What about this question from Tom Jenkins at TomHJenkins97? Is Rob Holding unlucky to have been dropped? He's been one of our most consistent players this season. Louise so often slows our build-up down so much.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I wonder if there's an element of Louise playing because Gabriel is playing.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't considered that.
You know, the two Portuguese speakers, the two Brazilians. Yeah, so maybe there's an element of that going on.
Cedric as well, the Portuguese speaker on the other side of him.
Sure. So maybe there's an element of that. I don't think Luis and Gabriel is necessarily a bad partnership. We weren't really talking about Luis slowing things down when we were 4-0 up against Leeds.
No.
You know, so is Holding a little unlucky to be dropped? Maybe.
I don't know if he was dropped per se.
I think he was probably rested, but.
And then we won a game and the team kept their places. Do you know what I mean? I don't think it was anything against Rob Holding, more so just a kind of reward for the team that played against Leeds.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to make definitive judgments on Arteta's team selection decisions because they tend, from the outside anyway, to seem a bit random or arbitrary or what have you. I mean, I tell you one thing that I did notice this week. In his pre-game press conference, Mikel Arteta was asked about Nicolas Pepe and, you know, his record in the Europa League and the recent good form that he's shown. And he was positive about Pepe, and he was positive about, you know, we've seen good things from him and, you know, what have you. But then he talked about Martin Odegaard. And there was a difference. That he seems particularly smitten with Martin Odegaard and the qualities that he has. Like, he was ebullient when he was talking about him. With Pepe, it was much more matter of fact, even though he was being positive about him. I mean, I think Arteta has this, I don't know if you can call it fantastic, but this amazing ability to say a lot in response to a question, but you're still kind of left scratching your head at times.
Yeah.
Like, he gives very little away. Like, he was asked about the Aubameyang tattoo thing and, you know, gave an answer, and it was like, I still have no idea what happened.
Well, he has a slight cyborg quality to him.
Yeah,
you know what
I mean? And, like, some of it, he's straight up. He just goes, I'm not going to talk about that. I won't talk about this. I'm not going to talk about, you know, a transfer rumor, for example. I can't talk about a player at another club. Simple. Bash it away. But he does have this... There's a sort of hard shell to get through. I've completely lost my train of thought here as to why am I talking about this? We're talking about team selection decisions, Rob Holding, David Luiz, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
I just wonder if there was an element of fatigue with Holding as well. He played a lot. I mean, he played pretty much every game for, a couple of months? And I think at some point there is a need to... if not protect the player, just give him a bit of a break to recharge his batteries. So maybe it's that. I'll be interested to see, you know, what happens with the team on Sunday. With regards to Luiz, I know he can slow the play up, and he does frustrate me in that sense. And I have, you know, fairly deep concerns about his ability to self-destruct or implode or to get involved in incidents which are damaging to us, you know? He can play really well for three or four games and then something happens yet again with David Luiz. So, you know, that's never far from the back of my mind with him.
What have you made of Gabriel since he's come back into the team?
Good. Wasn't good against Southampton in his first game back.
No.
But
he looked rusty then.
He did, but that was, you know, a month out with COVID, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, you can understand why that might be the case. I wonder as well if Holding and Gabriel is quite, what was the word you used earlier on? Simpatico in terms of their compatibility, you know? Whereas, he looked good against Leeds. I thought he played a really smart game against Leeds. I know we conceded a couple of goals, but overall, I thought it was a good central defensive performance from him. I thought he was good last night. He created that chance for Aubameyang.
Yeah,
it was a really good long pass. I'm not sure he's quite got his eye in there when it comes to the long passing, but, you know, he does try a few and one came off last night. So I think he's looking a bit more like the Gabriel we saw, you know, early on in the season.
I agree.
I've been happy with him in the last couple of games.
I have been too. I still think the balance of a partnership is kind of still sort of question to be solved. You know, who is the right partner for you? I'm not 100% convinced by either Holding or Luiz in that respect. And it's not even a sort of personal thing against those players. It's just, you know, is that the right chemistry? And I think my hunch is that maybe, you know, that's going to be someone who's outside the club at the moment. But I think Gabriel has looked significantly better since that Southampton game and seems to be finding some sort of rhythm again. And given his age and the investment in him, you know, it is tempting to keep that going. You mentioned Mikel Arteta eulogising about Martin Odegaard. There's been a lot of questions from different people about the prospect of signing him. Naif on the Discord says, morning gents, is there a chance we keep Odegaard permanently?
I was looking at some stuff today. Look, every club has their stuff account, don't they? You know, the stuff account that aggregates, we've got AFC stuff and what have you, but there was a Madrid stuff account.
Right.
And look, the stuff that those stuff accounts stuff onto their timelines ranges from, you know, solid information and quotes to really speculative stuff. But I saw them talking about, this was the Madrid stuff, talking about how in the wake of the Kylian Mbappe performance in midweek where he, you know, brutalized Barcelona
he was
unbelievably good. you know, they were going to sell off a load of players to try and bring him in because basically they're fucking broke. So are Barcelona. But the, you know, they're going to have a bit of a fire sale so they can put all their eggs in the basket, if you like. So how true that is, I do not know. But if it genuinely is something that they want to do and they need money in a big way, based on what I've seen so far from Martin Odegaard, I'd be on for it. I would green light that deal. If it were me and they said it's 25 million for Martin Odegaard right now, do you do it? I'd do it.
Right, yeah. Even on this tiny sure. wee sample size. Yeah.
Sure. These could be famous last words. They could come back to haunt me, but all I can give you is my gut instinct, my gut feeling on this, and I would do it because I see a lot to like about the way he not just plays the game, but the way he sees the game.
Yeah, I do too. And I wonder as well, you know, you spoke about Arteta being incredibly positive about him in his press conference. Is part of that that he's got a player here who's a Real Madrid player that he wants to try and convince to remain in North London? And, you know, he's got to launch a bit of a charm offensive because Odegaard moved to Madrid as a teenager and, you know, presumably with dreams of becoming an important part of their first team at some stage. And if there is a managerial change there or if, you know, a big turnover in the squad, that opportunity could still be there for him. And ultimately, I do feel that with these players who belong to Real Madrid, if they feel they have the opportunity to play for Madrid, it's going to be very difficult to dissuade them of pursuing that. But I hope we can keep Martin Odegaard.
Yeah,
he looks very talented.
Imagine the conversation you have to have with Martin Odegaard. You know, come join us at Arsenal. No, don't worry about firing through assists and passes for Kylian Mbappe. What do you come on? Anyone could do that. The real challenge is making Eddie Nketiah into a 20 goal a season striker.
Yeah. Seeing if we can break back into the top six. I suppose we need to have a measure of realism about this.
Of course. But, you know, I'm just saying, in an ideal world, if it were possible, I would be happy to do it right now.
Yeah. Maybe they should try and do it right now before he keeps being really good and gets much more expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
the
other question is, you know, we don't know what Madrid would expect to receive for a player like that.
Mm. Quite a lot, I would say.
Of course, I'm doing the classic fan thing of slightly falling for a player who doesn't belong to us, leading to my heart inevitably being broken. So,
is that any worse than falling for a player who does belong to you and is so good that he goes somewhere else anyway?
True. Absolutely. So, I mean, let's hope they do need to raise a lot of money very quickly and they'll sell them to us for like a tenner.
Yeah, hope so. All right. Matt. Who is on the Discord, had a big number one hit, didn't he? Feeling in his fingers. Oh, that's the guy. Anyway, he says, what are your impressions of Smith Rowe on the left? He seems to have some stylistic attributes in common with Pires. Ooh. But the intelligence of his movement was working very well in the centre and he looks a little marginalised out wide.
I think he has been slightly pushed to the margins. I mean, in a literal sense, he's sort of playing from the wide areas. I think it means he's probably on the ball a little bit less. But, I mean, Arsenal do so much of their build-up play down the flanks. I wouldn't even be sure that's true. I think it works for him, actually. I think it suits him.
Mm.
And I think it enables us to squeeze in an Odegaard next to him who brings different qualities. You know, Smith Rowe, if you ask me to say what are his really positive traits, I mean, he's got a lot, but for me, his off-the-ball running and movement is really high on that list, whereas Odegaard's much more kind of on-the-ball player and I think a better passer than Smith Rowe. So actually, I think they dovetail pretty effectively together. So I like Smith Rowe on the left, and I have to say I'm really looking forward to seeing it once Kieran Tierney's back starting too.
Yeah, I hadn't really considered Smith Rowe on the left as an option. You know what I mean? I know we've seen him play on the right, but you know, the idea of him as a left-sided player hadn't really occurred to me a great deal because I saw him a bit more centrally, and certainly the role he was playing for us was more central and effectively. But we talked about it on the last podcast as well, in that he did have, you know, a good game against Leeds, working with Aubameyang, knowing when to come in, knowing when to combine, providing space for Aubameyang to move into out there when he needed to, and everything else. So I think there's something interesting there. It really depends what you're looking for, though, doesn't it? Do you want like a classic winger on the left side of your front three? I mean, we don't have that anyway. We've got Aubameyang, who's a striker who wants to be in the middle. We've got Pepe, who plays there. But again, you know, he's somebody who's played most of his football on the right-hand side, and he's not the kind of... Who was that guy that used to play for... He's the classic left-footed, knock it past him, put a cross in winger. He used to play for Blackburn. Stuart Ripley? Was that the guy?
Jason Wilcox.
Jason Wilcox. Yeah, that guy. Yeah. He's not that guy on the left-hand side. Saka can play there. We know that he can do a job out there. Martinelli as well, but I think we're beginning to see more and more that Martinelli might have a role to play in the centre. So it really depends what the team or what Mikel Arteta wants from the player on that left-hand side. And I think it kind of suits Smith Rowe. I think you're right to say that his movement and his combination play and the way he kind of dips in and out of pockets of space to make things happen, rather than pick up the ball, look up and play that kind of killer 30, 40 yard pass, the precision assist or creative pass. I'm not saying he can't do it, but I don't think that's necessarily his game in the way that it is with Odegaard.
No, I don't think we're asking Smith Rowe to play as a winger, really. You know,
no.
I mean, especially with Tierney there, he's going to provide the overlap and the width. Smith Rowe is going to be allowed to come inside. He did that really effectively, kind of interchanging with Aubameyang against Leeds. We need to see more of this. You know, we need to see more of this shape and see how the relationships develop. But I don't think it hurts Smith Rowe too much to be pushed into wide areas, because when he plays as a number 10, he ends up drifting into those spaces anyway. You know, I think it's where he instinctively knows he can do most damage. The main thing I'm pleased with him is how much football he's playing. You know, he's playing game after game, touch wood, seems to be coming through it really, really well. Mm. And I think at his age, at this point in his development, to take that kind of physical step is huge for him.
Okay, well, let me follow that one up with one from the Discord as well, from Arsenal Monkey, who says, are you worried at all with the number of minutes some of our crucial players are getting? Aubameyang could have been subbed on Sunday after his hat-trick. Emile Smith-Rowe seems to be playing a lot for an injury-prone player with direct cover in Odegaard, and Saka barely gets a rest and is being kicked to bits by the opposition. Something has to give, and I hope it isn't forced by injury. Sorry for going to negative town. And there was also one on Twitter as well from Nishant, who's at Nishant Gunner 10, who says, Arteta spoke about managing Saka's minutes. Do you expect him to be on the bench on Sunday in a game where we won't have much of the ball?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's funny with Smith Rowe, because I've kind of had those injury concerns about him previously. As I said, I sort of feel encouraged by the fact he's able to play with so much repetition. With Saka, maybe it's just because he's been so brilliant recently, but I do have that kind of impending sense of doom. Is something bad just around the corner? I might have just been burnt by previous trauma with young Arsenal players. I don't think Saka will play against Man City. I think he has to be due a break. What do you think?
Yeah, I think if you're going to look at the Man City game as one where we have to do something different to stay in the game. I'm not saying it's going to be a backs to the wall.
Well, could it be a back three?
Oh God, I hope not.
It's been quite effective against them in the past. Well, certainly wasn't the FA Cup semi-final.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't considered that, actually. I just sort of assumed we would be playing with a back four. I think if you are looking at the Man City game as one which is going to be very difficult for us to get anything from, and from which we're going to have to put in a hell of a defensive effort.
I mean, I am definitely looking at it as one that it's going to be difficult for us to get anything.
Yeah. Sure. So do you ask other players to do the kind of running that Saka has been doing? That makes sense. Now that it's put out there, it does make sense.
I mean, look, it would be fantastic to get a result against Man City. It would be a huge fillip for Arteta and for our running. But I don't know. I just feel that second leg against Benfica looms very, very large. I think arguably the game against Leicester the following weekend looms large too. I mean, you know, although Leicester are comfortably ahead of us in the table, that does feel like a more winnable game than facing Man City in the kind of form they're in.
Yeah.
So I'd almost be tempted to kind of load my team up more for that one than this. I think, personally, and I know you're going to be doing a preview pod, you'll talk about this more on that, but I'd be looking at people like Lacazette and Pepe who've not played a huge amount of minutes in the last week or so and thinking this might be the day for them.
Yeah, I think it's a day for, certainly it's going to be a day for fresher legs because City will move you around the way that they do. And I do think we have to manage Saka's minutes. We've got to. At some point, we can't just keep playing him and playing him and playing him and hoping, A, he's going to be physically all right, B, there won't be any long-term consequences, or C, he breaks down somewhere along the way. You know, at some point, the run of form that he's in will not necessarily come to an end, but, you know, he's not going to keep producing at this rate, I don't think, anyway. I mean, I could be wrong, and I hope I am, but I think at some point he's going to have a little bit of a dip, and some of that will be physical. And how quickly he can get back to his peak physical level will determine in some way how quickly he can get back to producing on the pitch as well. So,
I mean, as always with these things, they're making more informed decisions than us, you know?
Of course.
And we have to hope that all that's being taken properly into account. Another name that I'd throw in to the hat for Man City, by the way, is Gabriel Martinelli, who was really impressive against them in the Carabao Cup game, I think, until he maybe had to go off injured.
He got injured before the break, didn't he? And then he came back out and lasted about 2 minutes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he'd had a pretty good first half and seemed to cause him some problems on that left flank. So I think he's another option that you could throw in. I would be resting some weary legs. I'm trying to think of others who might need it. Maybe Xhaka if you can. But yeah, we shall see. It's not a game. It's a game I'm sort of intrigued to see how we fare in, but not one that I'm placing a huge amount of hope on, I have to admit.
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting one in that people are saying, well, look, we're not going to get anything out of this game. So, you know, why do anything that might be considered risky? At the same time, though, you kind of have to measure yourself against the best team and the best teams in the league. You can't just sort of go into a game and say, well, they're much better than us. What happens here doesn't matter. You know,
that will never be the case for Arteta against Man City anyway.
No,
I don't think,
that's true.
A clear motivation.
Yeah, for sure. And like, it brings me onto this question from the Discord from Cyan Man, who says, when people suggest we focus on the Europa League, what does that mean? That they wouldn't be bothered if we lost in the Premier League? Surely winning as many games as possible is crucial to building momentum, confidence and support for the club and places us in a stronger position for next season. So, you know, all the rationalisation that people might do about, okay, look, we have to focus on Europa League. It's our only chance of silverware. We win a trophy. We get into the Champions League. All of those things I see, I acknowledge. But nobody will excuse bad results or bad performances in the Premier League unless you go all the way and you win that trophy. And even then, people will be saying, well, yeah, we won the cup competition, but our form in the league was terrible. It is a difficult balance, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it is. And ultimately, it's only results that determine whether you got it right or not. I think Man City might be a bit of an exception in some ways, in that I think they're so clearly ahead of everybody else in the Premier League this season that I think people will be a bit more philosophical about the outcome of that game. But I think, you know, say the Leicester one in a couple of weeks' time, if we play a rotated side in that match and are heavily beaten, I don't think people will take kindly to that. When you say put the Europa League first, what does it mean? I guess what it means is if you're saying we can't play Bukayo Saka in every single game, which are the games you take him out of? And I suppose people who favour pursuing the European side would say, well, look, you take him out of a Premier League game here and there. But you're absolutely right. It's not a case of all or nothing. And I think Arteta, I think the fact that he picked the same team for Leeds and for Benfica shows that he's kind of making this up on the fly a little bit. You know, I don't think he came into this fortnight thinking, right, well, I'll pick the same team for those two games. I think that he was encouraged by what happened against Leeds and then decided to stick with it.
Mm.
And now he's got another decision to make about what he does for Man City. And I'm sure what happens there will influence what he does against Benfica and Leicester. You know, it does feel as if he's kind of riding this and seeing how players respond to games, how players perform,
mm.
you know, what injuries do we pick up. It's a really difficult task in a really intense, tricky period. And I guess the other side of it is he might be thinking, well, if we don't perform well in these games, our season is over. Therefore, I'm going to put out the strongest 11 I can in each of these four matches and then sort of kind of see where we are.
Yeah, make an assessment then if you get through to the, well, it's the round of 16 and then you get the quarterfinals. I mean, look, the Premier League, when you look at the table, 34. So, you know, we're 6 points off sixth.
Mm.
That's not something you can just write off, in my opinion. Even if you consider the Europa League more important, a 6 point gap to your European football next season, whether you want Europa League next season or not, that's a different debate and maybe one we can have in a few weeks' time. But, you know,
maybe we should have the debate again, kind of in about this Premier League versus Europa League, almost after that Leicester game, because I do wonder how much clearer the picture will be there. A, we'll know if we're through to the next round in the Europa League, and I do wonder if that gap, you know, maybe it will have closed, maybe it will have widened, and at that point, it might become a little more apparent, kind of where our hope lies.
Yeah.
Is it another, my turn for a question?
Think so, if you've got
one. Yeah, so this is from Yotanwas Bay, who's at Yam Yam Baklava. I like that name, on Twitter. And they say, do you think the divide amongst fans on certain players has reached a critical level? Players like Bellerin receive so much flack, even refusing to give him his dues when he plays good, only waiting to prey on his downfall again.
I don't know if it's reached, what was the phrase?
Critical level.
I think it's always been like that.
Mm.
Genuinely, I think it's always been like that with certain players, that they become, there's almost like a cycle. They, you know, they become divisive and then, you know, it, maybe it goes so far one way, people begin to feel a bit sorry for them and, you know, it comes back around. I just think it's always been like that with certain players. There are always players who are going to be divisive at any club, in any team. There's going to be people who just absolutely can't stand him. And there are people who, perhaps in response to that, you know, back that player. Like, I thought Bellerin was quite good last night, but I'm sure there are lots of people who don't want to see anything good that Hector Bellerin does. And look, I, you know, I get accused of this all the time because I have a soft spot for Hector Bellerin. That's fine. No, people can like who they like, right? I'm not.
Yeah.
It's not criminal to think he's bad, and it's not criminal to think he's good, or it's not, you know, wrong to think he's better than some people think. Similarly, maybe he's not as good as other people think. You know what I mean? Those differences of opinion around players have been part of the conversation for time immemorial, and, you know, Bellerin will go, and Xhaka will go, and Ozil has gone, and even Aubameyang, to a certain extent. You know, I was talking to somebody on the Arses this morning, and we were just chatting about, you know, what was going on, and he sort of said, well, I don't think Aubameyang deserved to start last night. I was like, well, he just scored a hat-trick in the previous game, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, those differences of opinion are just part and parcel of the football conversation that we all have, one way or another, and we all have our favourites, and we all are more willing, let's say, to overlook deficiencies in players we like than ones we don't like. That is human nature. So
I think that's right. I think that's true. I think social media may kind of accelerate and amplify the degree to which those debates become kind of polarized. You know, I think there's a tendency to kind of set up people in very direct opposition.
Yeah, there's an idea, isn't there, that it can only be black or white.
Yeah,
it's either or, and there's nothing in between. You can't exist in the middle ground, or the middle ground does not exist when it comes to strident opinions on players. I think that's true of social media, that you know, you can say, well, I like this about him, but I don't think he's good at that. That's like, whoa, what the... What?
You've got to be a Bellerin stan, as they say, or you've got to think Bellerin's a fraud or something.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is. But I think you're right. These debates have always happened, and there is a kind of cyclical nature to it. You know, it changes. There's always... I'm not sure if scapegoat is quite the right word, but I think our kind of consciousness as a fan base will sort of focus on different players or areas of the team at different times. And it's tempting to say, unless you're winning everything, that's always going to happen. There's always going to be an imperfection. There's always going to be an upgrade. But I remember when we were winning everything. Yeah. And those conversations still happened. You know, the Invincibles, I remember people saying, well, you know, is Lauren really a natural right back? Or Gilberto, he's very good defensively, but can he pass enough? Or what if we could get David Trezeguet to play up front with Henri instead of Dennis Bergkamp? You know, someone who scored 30 goals, a fox in the box.
But
people always are looking for improvement.
Yeah, like, you know, when the team is that good and it's doing well, there's still going to be players who people focus on. Like, you think about Pascal Seguin. And, you know, this is a guy who made a solid contribution to our season. To going unbeaten. Was he the greatest player in the world? Absolutely not. But, at that time, in comparison to, you know, Sol Campbell, Kolo Touré, and how good they were that season, the focus goes to the guy who's slightly down the pecking order to an extent, you know?
And I think he was, by the way, I think he was better than a lot of the centre-halves we had since then.
I think that's true. I think that's true.
But I guess the barometer, you know, kind of moves, doesn't it, depending on the standard of the team. But yeah, I think this is always going to be the case. And there are always going to be players who are in the firing line. You know, we know who some of the ones are at Arsenal at present. And maybe that will shift. Maybe it will rotate. It's kind of an amorphous thing. But I don't think it's going anywhere.
No, it's not. And it's just, like I said, it is what it is. And 5 years down the line, you know, when we're doing episode 800 or whatever it might be, fingers crossed, you know, we're all still around and the world isn't a Bernie fiery mess. You know, we'll be having a similar conversation about a different player. Or different players.
Exactly.
It's just the way it is.
But look, I'll be obese from consuming hundreds upon hundreds of Kit Kats.
And yellow M&Ms. Don't forget the yellow M&Ms. Which brings us nicely to the end of this particular podcast. We're a little bit pushed for time today, so we're going to leave it there for now. As ever, thank you very much indeed for listening. Preview pod for Man City available on Patreon a bit later on. We'll be here on Monday to talk about whatever happens between Arsenal and Man City at the weekend, so please join us for that. So until then, take it easy.
Bye bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.